This is an Audio Wool original.
I appreciate it. I'm so happy to see you.
Nice to meet you.
It's been what, like 7 years since the initial release of A Midnight Swim? Is that right?
I mean, something like that. It depends on when you start counting. Like sure. If you start from the festival or the distribution release, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say, I'm absolutely thrilled that Yellow Veil, those folks are redistributing the film. I saw it at its initial VOD run in 2015, raved about it to all my friends. But yeah, after this long period with a few projects in between then and now, how is the opportunity for folks to rediscover this feel?
I'm almost surprised by how excited I am about it, I think. And maybe it's because of sort of where I'm at in my career right now. I'm looking back at this film and realizing, I think, just how special that time in my life was. And so, and how much this film still means to me. And I think it's... it's a real honor, I guess, to get this re-release. Yellow Veil is just a group of like really cool people who truly love film. And so it feels like, I don't know, it's really kind of, everyone's doing it for the love of it. And yeah, that's just, it makes it feel not so much like this commercial enterprise, but something a little bit more pure, which is perhaps why it means so much to me in the first place and why I kind of look back on this movie with such nostalgia.
Yeah, I think that they've definitely put out some of the more interesting films in the past couple years. And, you know, it's just such a nice second home for A Midnight Swim. But I guess we could start. Could you take me back a little bit? This was your first feature, like you said. You filmed it in Iowa over 2 weeks, small crew. I think I saw in your featurette that you guys all bunked together in the same house.
Yeah, for the most part, it was like a tiny, tiny crew. Myself, my producer, Jonico Donnelly, my husband / DP, Shaheen Seth, our production manager, Noah Mucci, Needham Smith, who was like our gaffer / assistant camera / grip / everything else, like entire G&E and camera support team, Josh Bissett, who recorded sound for us, and then three local PAs, and that was it. We were just kind of doing everything ourselves, as like small as Jonico and I, you know, making sandwiches and scrubbing toilets, to like actors bringing in a lot of their own wardrobe, doing their own hair and makeup. It just kind of felt like what you imagine when you're a kid, what making films might feel like, where it's just highly collaborative and kind of a lot like playing make-believe with like-minded people. It felt like that in so many ways. And like we would be shooting all day, but then making dinners and drinking wine at night. Yeah, we got every day, all that's kind of felt more and more like a family. And so it's strange that it was only 2 weeks, because it really felt like time kind of expanded for us, and it feels like we were there for so much longer than that.
And this wasn't an unfamiliar place for you. It was a family summer home, is that right?
Yeah, no, this was like the place that meant the most to me in my childhood, and had, I always felt closest to magic in this place, because I was born and raised in Colorado, but my mom's family was from Iowa. So every summer we would pack the whole family in the Suburban and drive to Iowa and spend a lot of the summer there. Actually, for that reason, when we were shooting in that house in the beginning, I was really anxious. I was like really afraid we were going to break it and I was going to, you know, get in trouble with my family, but also just like, it's almost, the house is like this mausoleum. My mom lost her mom when she was quite young, when she was only 50. And the house is almost this mausoleum to her mother. Like not much has changed since that time. And so I think it's very sacred. And I was really nervous that by shooting a movie, we were going to accidentally damage something in some ways. But like the house was like so there for it. It was like that place has a spirit and was like really welcoming. And like it stood the test of time of like a whole family growing up, many families growing up there for so many years. So it was like, had no problem with the film shoot.
When you were writing the script, it wasn't necessarily a traditional script. Were you always intending to shoot at the house in Iowa, or did it change when you made that decision?
So originally I had written a totally different script to shoot at that house. At the time, it felt like a much bigger budget. It was like, it wasn't that big of a budget by like sort of real movie standards. But at the time, it was like a bigger budget film in my mind. I think it was like 1.5 million or something. And that seems like so much money. That movie kept falling apart. And when it fell apart the last time, it like really, really broke my heart. And we had done all this groundwork there in locations and some like local casting and all this, a bunch of other stuff. So we just decided to kind of like pick up the pieces of that other project that fell apart and then shoot something else. And originally I thought I was going to just go shoot a short film, but then Jonico's husband, Daniel Stamm, who's also a good friend of mine, talked some sense into me. And he was like, don't you dare make another short. You need to make a feature and you need to do it right now. Stop being precious about it. Make a micro budget feature, do it as an improv film and see what happens. And I had been really resistant to that idea. I think I had a notion in my head that like, as a feature filmmaker, things needed to be much more set in stone or sort of, yeah.
Was there a stigma attached to the improvised thing? Because that was almost
definitely like... and to found footage, honestly, you know, it was like like, do I really want to, I was being a bit too precious about what my first feature film needed to be. And so I was humbled and surprised by how much I learned by not having control of everything and by like releasing the reins just a little bit, or at least loosening them a bit. Then it became less about a process of dictating and more about a process of discovery.
Yeah, it came out at an interesting time for both those subgenres, like the mumblecore improvisational film as well as found footage. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Like, yeah, I actually think it kind of, to be honest, it hurt us in our first release that it was considered part of like the found footage genre. I think people were more quick to dismiss it because of that. I was trying to do something different than found footage. It's like sort of found footage adjacent. I wanted it to be an emotional POV movie.
Sure.
Like a movie that you're actually getting to view from the character's brain. And it just so happens like the camera is the eyeball that lets you do that. It's the medium that lets you do that. But I wasn't so interested in like the idea that there was like, there's a box of tapes that her sisters discovered and
text
scrolling
editor. At the beginning. Yeah.
And I liked the idea instead that like, I mean, who knows if the character June even had tape in that camera. Mm-hmm. She was just rolling all the time. It was just her way of viewing the world rather than it actually being a document.
Yeah. I do want to talk a little bit about June. I absolutely adore Lindsay Burge. I've been following her for a long time. Amazing.
Yeah.
But the character of June, oftentimes behind the camera, but sometimes in front, what was the process of combining her character? How do you keep the camera June?
First of all, Lindsay Burge is one of the greatest actors I have ever worked with. And it's criminal to me that she's not more well known. She's like magic on screen, and I really hope to get to work with her again very soon. But it was a real collaboration, and again, for me, this is what was so important and pivotal for me about making this movie, was it taught me to listen rather than to come with all these preconceived ideas of who June was or how the camera needed to move. It put me in a position of observing. And so it was really like the way Lindsay Burge chose to move, the pace at which she chose to move very physically through space, the way she would walk through rooms, kind of cast a spell. And so I just allowed the camera to respond to that spell. And I think Shaheen, Lindsay and I, most of the time, very wordlessly kind of getting in a sort of rhythm together. It was like we became a little hive mind of three. And then I would think about, when I'm thinking about how to cover something, it's coming from inside. So it's more, you know, what would June want to look at right now? Mm-hmm. What's making her uncomfortable? Is she going to lean into that discomfort, sometimes almost in an aggressive way? Or is she fearful right now? And is she going to look away?
Yeah, it's interesting. I do want to talk real quick about your husband, Shaheen. He's been your DP forever, since the beginning. Is that right?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I made a few, like, I met him when I was really young. I was pretty much right out of college. So I had made a few experimental films before meeting Shaheen. I was a painter before I started making films, but I was mostly just making what you would call like video art, I guess, before I met Shaheen. And then when we met, I think within like 3 or 4 weeks, we had already like, we were dirt broke and like making our living with little like design jobs here and there together. But within a few weeks of meeting each other, first of all, we moved right in together. Like I met him, and then the next day we had decided to move in, and then 3 or 4 weeks later, we were like, let's buy a camera together. Just
love
like
it.
Shoot something together. So So we've been really doing that ever since.
I just watched Birds of Paradise. It's been on my queue on Amazon for a long time. I thought what I saw was wonderful. I love Diana Silver's. The film is visually stunning.
Thank you.
Bigger feeling compared to A Midnight Swim, but I feel like there's these stylistic similarities you can still see. How do you feel like you and your partner's styles have evolved in the past decade?
Well, let me first say that there's like between, in terms of speaking to the similarities with those two movies, there's a kind of dreaminess to both, even though Birds of Paradise is much more of a like kind of commercial YA fare.
Yeah.
I think there is something that's still a tad mystical about it. And both movies, there's a story within a story that gets told, kind of a legend that becomes really important. I don't know. You know, it's hard for me to have a real enough self-awareness about that, because I think it might just be like what we like, you know, it just might be a little bit like who we are, and like almost like the equivalent of like someone who makes a drawing, what their hand looks like when they're drawing, you know, the stroke of their pen or something. You know, we obviously had more toys to play with on a Union Studio movie like Birds of Paradise. Perhaps one of the reasons the Midnight Swim's release means so much to me happening now is because, you know, in following the release of Birds of Paradise, which was, you know, a great experience in a lot of ways, but a much more controlled experience by necessity.
Sure.
So you have this gigantic crew, not only that, but we were shut down in COVID and had to come back. And so there was like, there wasn't as much room nearly at all for that improvisation and spontaneity and inviting the unexpected. And so I think it's probably what I'm missing so much. And in fact, I'm in post now on a movie which is semi-scripted and improvised as well. So like I was really just craving getting back to that kind of style after doing my first studio movie.
Before we get to that, because I'm gonna bug you about that in a second.
Sure.
From Budapest to Montana. So I was at your screening of Buster's Malhart at the Roxy Theater. I'm based in Missoula, Montana.
Oh my God, I love Missoula so much.
Isn't it great?
That just makes me like you more. I'm talking to you in Missoula.
I know you're a Coloradan, but yeah. what was it like shooting in Montana?
To hear the full episode, subscribe to Friday Screamium at patreon.com/Friday. That's patreon.com/Friday.
You've been listening to an Audio Wall original, produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowall.co.